Good morning and welcome to another edition of Arts and Information Showcase on 96 Classical KHFM Albuquerque Santa Fe. This morning I'm visiting once again with Yuji Krishnamurti, world traveler, who is visiting us we never know when. Welcome once again to 96.
Thank you.
You said earlier you were brought up in a Victorian household where certain manners were required. How do you remember that?
The whole atmosphere was Victorian. See, my revolt was against their manners and their morals. So that was my problem. And I had no way of resolving them for myself and by myself. And nobody helped me. So that's all that certain common decencies and elementary manners we have to observe. There is no harm in observing them.
So even though you rebelled, you still observe.
Yeah, just, it's very practical, just like walking on the right side or the left side. I had a friend who was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. She was from Switzerland and then towards the end of her life she lived in India. Every time she got into an automobile she said they are all driving on the wrong side. You know, she was so frightened that they would hit her car because she was used to the right-hand wheel or whatever you want to call it. So there is no special harm in observing certain rules, and we don't prove anything by violating those things. If I do violate certain things, I don't mind going myself, but we will hurt others also. And so the idea is not to create such situations for others. And I have a friend who is driving me all the time. And a friend of mine called the seat next to the driver a suicide seat. So I don't mind that. I sit in the suicide seat and I don't say anything while that particular individual is driving the car. She's sitting next to
you. You are not a backseat driver?
Never. I'm not a backseat driver, but I tell that person, please, for goodness sake, don't create situations for any accidents. You and I can go gracefully, but we will kill others in this, in the bargain, if I may use that word. So we have to be careful about others, you know.
When you rebelled as a young person then, in what way did you do that?
Well, it's a very difficult question, and at the same time it's a very simple question. The question that occurred to me, even when I was quite a kid, 7, 8 years old. So when you see an engine driver, you want to be an engine driver. When I was 14, my grandfather took me for a joyride in Madras, you see, plane. And then naturally, you want to be a pilot. And once a pontiff, a Hindu pontiff, visited my home. And you know the pontiffs have the scepter, crown and throne, everything. I was fascinated. I wish I could be like him because everybody was prostrating and treating him like a god man or god himself. Then I wondered, you see, I observed him very closely. How is he different from me? Why all these people are prostrating and offering obeisance, and what is so marvelous about him? How is he different from me? What is it that he has I don't have? And what irritated me most was that these Victorians who practiced certain manners and morals, and these holy men who dished out these pious platitudes, irritated me most because there was a sort of dichotomy in their lives. What they preached never operated in their lives. So that put me on this quest, this search to find out something is wrong somewhere. And you can't blame the followers. You see, it's an easy way out for us to blame the followers. But, if you question the followers, you are questioning the teacher. And if you question his teaching, naturally you are questioning the teachers too. But I never called anybody a hypocrite. Never. something wrong somewhere. And let me go to the very source itself. You see, all these great teachers who created the mess for us. You may not like the word mess because it was a real mess I found myself in. That's not the way I am operating, you know. Why should I be like them? So this was my real problem, and it started very early in my life, when I was 14 years old. And so I walked out my home on everything, and since then I have never lived in any place for 6 months at a stretch.
How many years ago? How many years ago was that?
That was exactly 60 years ago. And I'm now celebrating a sort of 60th anniversary of my travels around the globe. You asked me a while ago, where have I been all these days since we met last? I've been around the world twice. And I don't know why, you see. And people say, are you restless? It can't be restlessness. I've been here before several times. I first came to New Mexico because I read a lot about towers in D.H. Lawrence's books. And then I was curious when I first came to the United States to come up here and see that place. And I was terribly, terribly disappointed with that place. And since then, I haven't had a chance to come here, but... last year, he invited me here, our friend.
May I ask you, what disappointed you in Taos? The setting or the D.H. Lawrence Ranch or the life that he led there? What exactly was
I was trying to find a model for myself. When once you not actually reject, you see, try to free yourself from the religious models, you look around, you see, for another kind of a model. But when I read about how he, after so many years, fell for that German woman, that shattered my faith in that man. I'm sorry, it's no... I'm not saying anything about that nasty... let us be frivolous in this program anyway. It's very frivolous to put me on a program like yours. Supposed to be a classical music program.
That's all.
I've been on your program, and I don't know why you have chosen to put me again on your program.
I chose to put you on again because you've been around the world twice since we last met, and I want to know what you can teach me today.
You see, let me tell you something which will probably make my situation, position very clear. I haven't learned, he's an English professor sitting next to me, or learned anything new since we met last. Since I'm growing old, I'm almost 75, I'm forgetting some words. I may have added a few more words. And I assure you that I can say that I haven't learned anything worthwhile to change anything in my life. Or tell somebody to change their lives. There's nothing there to be changed in us. That's what I have been trying to put across. This is my song. You know, I sing this song. And I don't know who it was. It was Mark Twain or somebody who said that if you have to repeat a thing 23 times to create a habit in your life. I don't know. I'm not sure whether I'm quoting him right. But anyway, you don't have to repeat 23 times. To make everything into a habit. Everything is a habit, so it's a habit that brought me back here. There is a saying in Tamil language, you see, when you see the dog wandering, they say that the dog has no rest and it has no work. So, what is there for me to see in this world? I have seen enough. There is nothing more to see in this world. I am the same, the world is the same.
We are speaking this morning with U.G. Krishnamurti, world traveler. The rest is apparent. Tell me what new rejoicings you might have experienced in the last few months.
Rejoicings, that's not an easy word to swallow. I don't think I rejoice anything, you see, you know. Who in the name of God is getting away with murder? You see. And That's the only thing I watch on your television, murder, mayhem, rape. Not because I'm interested in that kind of a thing. There is something happening all the time, some action, some movement. That's all that I'm interested in. See, I'm not interested in any pious platitudes that all these politicians, religious people, thinkers are dishing out. They are all, as far as I am concerned, a shoddy piece of goods, and they haven't helped them. They are not going to help us. And there seems to be a market for that kind of a thing. So wherever there is a market, there is bound to be a supply. So that's a matter between those two, you know, the supply and demand.
So you're saying politics, politicians, churches, they're all the same kind of people.
Everything we do, think, feel, and experience is nothing but, I may use that word, warty outgrowth of the same religious thinking of man. Variations are the same. Basically, it is exactly the same, because all of our actions are born out of thinking. And even our legal codes, the whole legal structure, is built on the foundation of the religious thinking of man. If we are today condemning, maybe this is a controversial thing to mention.
Today we're condemning D.H. Lawrence.
D.H. Lawrence. And you are condemning abortion, and then you are against all kinds of things. And yesterday I was watching a program on your television saying that lesbians and homosexuals have this problem not because of the social conditions in which they are brought up. They are like any other sex hormones in the case of bisexuals, heterosexuals, whatever words you want to use. I am not advocating anything, but it is something strange that in the year 1992 we are coming to an end. Because I'm looking at it, so that's why I'm saying it is 1992. We are dealing with these problems as if we were living in medieval times. And it becomes very handy for these politicians to use them to get elected, because there are enough folks in this world who believe in that kind of a thing. We talk of sacredness of life. That is really a fact in our lives. Why would you go and kill in the name of politics, in the name of religion, in the name of a church, in the name of a mosque, in the name of a temple? You know, you have been reading what's going on in India. And so we use anything that comes handy, because people are there to believe in that kind of a thing and to fall for that kind of a thing. And the leaders of mankind, just the way the religious leaders exploited the situation that people were gullible, and we are still gullible to believe all these people and fall for that kind of a thing. I'm talking, you see, this is...
Do you feel like you are still gullible at 75?
Nobody can fool me at all, you see. It does not mean that I'm a revolutionary or... if the whole thing collapses, I wouldn't shed a tear, you see. And every now and then some friends of mine telephone me from India. India is burning. So what? You are responsible, individually responsible for that. The moment you call yourself a Hindu, you have created a problem there. You have created these divisions. So maybe something will come out of the ashes. We don't know. So why are you concerned about maintaining the status quo? You see, we don't want any change at all. All the time we are talking of bringing about a change, but factually, essentially, fundamentally, we are not for change of any kind. Even the change we are talking about is only to use that to perpetuate the same thing over and over.
How do you feel about the United States recently getting approval by the United Nations to go into Somalia with arms and weapons to make it easy to bring provisions and food to the starving people?
I have opinions on everything, you see, everything, from disease to divinity. But I can express my opinions, but what value has it, you see? But I have I am not going to back up my opinions at all. You see, if we want to use United Nations to back up our vicious deeds of killing people in the name of freedom, in the name of democracy, in the name of giving food, you see, one basic thing which we don't seem to understand, which we have failed to understand, we still don't understand, is that through war you cannot create peace in this world. See, so we don't want to learn anything. See, as far as this living organism is concerned, this body, perfect peace of organism created by nature, quote unquote, does not want to know anything, does not want to learn anything. Because I don't like to use the word know. You see, knowing has a lot of connotations about it, you see. And this survival depends upon, I mean, the survival of this living organism depends upon the survival of the life around. So the moment we separate ourselves and try to impose our ideations and mentations on how people should be like and the value system that we have created and forcing everybody to fit into that value system and the utopias we have invented, how the world should be in, is the one that is responsible for the tragedy of men.
So in a way, as a human being, we can only help those that are around us, and to go miles and miles away to attempt to help with guns and what have you,
but we,
is not really a help, but imposing a value system on another culture.
On another person, you see. I may say that you may not like, and next time I may not get even visa to visit your country. It doesn't matter. I've been coming here for so many years. That this country is using 25% of the world's resources, if what they say is true. I don't know. I read this in your newspapers. And what is the population of this country? 250 million. And what right do you have to use the world resources, 26% of the world resources? I am not the sort of a person to do anything to destroy this. You know, either join the forces against taking away the possibility of this nation exploiting and consuming 26% of the resources of the world. I'm just pointing out the situation we find ourselves in. And I have always maintained that this charity, this compassion, helping your fellow being through charity, is the most vicious and vulgar thing that the religious thinking has put in us, you see.
While
we take away everything that belongs to everybody, and then we give charity. What for? To keep them where they are. To see that they don't rebel against us and destroy what we consider to be our own. And we forget how we have become what we are today. And it is only through this exploitation of the weaker people and weaker nations. I'm not saying that I will join a party or a terrorist to destroy everything. See, this is going to destroy itself in the long run. You don't have to do a thing about it. And I'm not a prophet of doomsday or any such thing. And it's going to destroy itself. So we have seen the end of so many empires. And I was telling my friend today, I never, never thought that the empires, we were part of the British Empire, you know, India, was,
and
would ever come to an end even during the time of my great-grandson. And so where is that empire today? I never thought it would come to an end. And all of our attempt to keep this forever is not going to succeed in the long run. You know, whether it will happen tomorrow or after 100 years, it's going to go. Whatever we have created has got to be destroyed. Not by us, but the forces of nature, the laws of nature, if I may use them, is not going to tolerate the way we are destroying this planet, in the sense that planet is not in danger. That is a great big hype, to tell the world that the planet is in danger. See, it is not interested if all of us, 5 billion people, are wiped out, because all these bodies will be used by nature, recycle them to maintain the level of energy in this universe. See, so nature is not concerned about it. We are destroying the possibility of survival by trying to understand the laws of nature and use them to destroy the natural balance that is there in nature.
Do you think that there are natural cycles that go beyond our time limit on Earth, natural cycles of famine, of pestilence that do destroy large numbers of human beings?
I cannot express any definite opinion on that, but anything we say is reading something into the happenings and create some philosophical structure, interpret the events, but we really don't know. The earthquakes, the tornadoes, you can give fancy names to the tornadoes, Helen, and all kinds of names you have. But they're part of nature, you see. An earthquake is an essential thing on this planet because a realignment of this planet is taking place. So, but that is no consolation and comfort to us to believe that that is just something that is happening in nature all the time. But there is not much that we can do about it because we are concerned about these things. But the simple reason that we are losing our fellow beings and the properties that we have built with a great, tremendous care. So all that is going into nothing. So
into that's why being recycled organically.
Organically, yes.
Well, do you think people live on the San Andreas Fault? They're not in fear, or they feel, well, we just don't know enough and we accept nature and whatever comes down.
I don't think we really accept nature. We say that we accept nature. It really doesn't mean a thing when they say we accept nature, but we are acting, doing everything as if we don't accept it. Let me put it this way. The nature's laws always punish us, you know. They never reward us. It's only the man-made laws that function in the field of punishment and reward. So whether you are a child or a saint or a sinner, if you touch fire, it burns. You know, that's the way the nature's laws operate. You may talk of ecology and then other kind of fancy stuff, but everything you are doing is destroying the balance in nature, you know.
The balance you mentioned.
So many eucalyptus trees, why they are there. But if you are planting eucalyptus trees because they give the necessary material for your newspapers,
mm-hmm.
and the eucalyptus tree is absorbing tremendous amount of water. So there is going to be a water scarcity. I'm not saying all these things as a prophet of doomsday. We just don't want to read what is there on the wall.
Mm-hmm. The salmon who can't breed because of the dams on the rivers in the Northwest
is a
perfect example of man intervening. A good reason to help, well, some would say it's a good, to help by bringing electricity or to help by keeping floods from wiping out little villages. But what the big picture is that the fish are no longer able to.
All these experts predict earthquakes or whatever you want to call it after the event. General idea they have, you know, the seismologists tell us, but a real genuine one, if he's there, he knows that what he knows, seismology cannot help us to predict an earthquake with precision.
Mm-mm. I don't know that, can we predict anything in nature?
Because it's the past that is always trying to create a future. And the future does not exist. If I may make that rash statement, but the future is a modified continuity of the past. And whatever we are doing is to use the past experiences of us, the experiences of our forefathers passed on to us, to create a future beneficial, a little more comfortable than the present. That's the reason why we are talking of the future, you know.
What about the now?
You see, at this moment, I am in your memory. So you want to carry on the memory, although I am not sitting here and talking, but you listen to these the audio cassettes and television interviews and refresh your memory. That's all. I live in your memory at this moment. Otherwise, if the memory is not in operation there, I am not talking of a person suffering from Alzheimer's disease or any such thing. But the fact that I am in your memory is all that I am emphasizing. Otherwise, I don't exist. You have no way of knowing of what's going on here, you see.
Is it your spirit that is in my memory or your ideas?
I don't exist at all. The ideas you have of memory, of me, it is your memory that has created me, placed me here. It is your memory that is translating what I am saying. Right? Otherwise, this listening mechanism of that human body does not listen to anything. It does not even translate. The translation comes after a while. If there is a need for the translation of what is being recorded there by the computer there, just the way that your radio is recording everything, it is not translating what I am saying into English, French, German or Italian, but it is just translating. If you play it, it repeats without knowing what is recorded on that. In exactly the same way, this mechanism is recording everything. But there is no need for it to translate while it is listening. It doesn't even know that you are saying things in English. Although I am talking, there is nobody who is talking. It may sound very funny to you, but that's a fact. You see, there is nobody who is talking. There is just a talking. The talking is just the playing of what is recorded there on the radio.
And all now, happening in our memory.
That's all.
Gosh, E.G. Krishnamurti, we've spent another 30 minutes talking. I hope you will come back to Albuquerque.
I hope not.
I have to tell you, in closing, I had many listeners respond to our visit the last time. Some of them said, how dare you say the things and believe the things that you believe? Others were fascinated and felt that doors had been opened for them in looking at things a little differently. How do you react to those?
Nothing. It's just the same for me, whether they react one way or the other.
Do you enjoy one reaction more than the other?
No, is my answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming once again to 96.3 Classical KHFM, Albuquerque, Santa Fe.
Before you know
He's
where
gone.
I am, I'm gone.
He's gone. He's not. I'm making all of this up, you realize. Thank you for coming. I'm Susan Dean on 96, Classical KHFM, Albuquerque, Santa Fe.